It's time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning, and we talk about food. And I was just explaining to Arthur off the air that the last show we had spurred me to go out and get some small clams and make my own version of spaghetti with the clam sauce. Good morning,
with
Arthur.
Clams. Except, you know, last week I told you, instead of clams, I made the same thing but with monkfish because of whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, this week is another story. I am eating pasta again, Marshall.
Yay.
But, you know, very limited, and I'm back in my, what I used to call the pasta lover's diet. I've added some carbohydrates to my diet, like I'm allowing myself two slices of whole grain bread. It's very high-fiber bread. Good. It really, and I must say, it has had an effect. My change of diet. But the thing is, when you're on a ketogenic diet, you don't really have to be too calorie conscious. It's hard to be calorie conscious because it's all very high fat food. However, when you're on a more balanced diet, which is what I'm aiming for, although after a couple of years now of not eating a lot of carbohydrates, I know how to have a nice meal without them. But I've included it and I think I feel better. And let me just say, carbs are calming. And in this day and age, and today especially, and yesterday also, we need to be calmed down a bit because of the many, many horrible things going on in the world. So I buried my nose in cookbooks. This started with Bob Harned wanting me to make a real old-fashioned banana bread that, instead of the banana cake I've been lately making when we have overripe bananas. So I looked in the likely sources for me of my old cookbook writer friends, pulled them off the shelf. They were stacked up on the kitchen table because I was perusing them all. And he said, why don't you just go on the Internet? I said, well, I could, and I'm certain I will find what you're looking for. But I thought I would ask my old friends, Richard Sachs, who's long gone, died very young. I looked at his book, Home Desserts. I looked at the books of my friend Carol Walter, my baking teacher slash guru over the many years whenever I've needed some baking advice. I always turn to Carol. And she's still around, thank God. And let's see. I mean, I had a bunch of books on the table. And I'm thinking, you know, I so much more enjoy. I could go online. I so much more enjoy going through the books, especially if they were old friends. And eventually I got to my own book, Cooking in a Small Kitchen, my very first cookbook, published in 1979, so I was, how old was I? I was very young. I was young. You know, when you get old, you start remembering all these things, and one thing leads to another, and so I'm reading Cooking in a Small Kitchen, and instead of banana bread, which was not in this book, but there is a banana bread, I do have, let me sidebar. I do have an old-fashioned banana bread recipe. I believe it's in Soup Suppers. It could be in What to Cook. One of those. I have to go look now. I did find it the other day. And it's a recipe from an old friend of mine, deceased, Alan Damon. And he said this is his go-to banana bread. But he developed a technique in the food processor, which I sort of am a little suspect of. But looking around, this is still the sidebar, looking around on the Internet, I discover Alan's recipe in other hands, not in the food processor, but the identical proportions of flour, banana, egg, sugar. And they're all from New England, where Alan was from Massachusetts. And they're all from New England, and everybody says it's an old family recipe. So that's the one I'm going to go to. Meantime, I'm looking at Cooking in a Small Kitchen, and I'm very proud to say Cooking in a Small Kitchen, my very first cookbook, was republished, it's now already 3.5, almost 4 years ago, under a new publisher, and it's a new series called Picador Cookster Classics. Picador is an imprint of Macmillan. Cookster is interesting. Cookster is a website, COOKSTR.com. It's still there. I went to it yesterday, and I got lost in Cookster, I got to say, because Cookster is a collection of cookbook recipes by cookbook writers, not necessarily, not usually, in fact, chefs, but these days often chefs, that the editors at Cookster deem to be very reliable. So I've been on Cookster since the beginning of Cookster. I forget which books they've excerpted of mine on Cookster. But then they went into the publishing business with Picador, the imprint of Macmillan. Macmillan bought Cookster. So if you go to Cookster.com, you're going to a Macmillan, I don't know, do we say auxiliary or whatever? The first, this cookbook series, the classics series, initially had three books. Mine, Cooking in a Small Kitchen. The only thing different about the books, because they're photocopies of the original books, they are absolutely identical to the typo of the original books. For instance, I found in one of them that the abbreviation for tablespoon, TBSP, is sometimes typographically incorrect as DSP, but I can tell they mean tablespoon. Anyway, they're photocopies, but they're a little smaller than the original. The type isn't smaller, but the margins are smaller, so the page is smaller. And they have new covers and new introductions, or forwards, I should say. They're not introductions. My forward in Cooking in a Small Kitchen was done by Lydia Bastianich. Lydia, the queen of Italian TV cooking and restaurants. She's got several, maybe now many restaurants. But Lydia and I go way back to literally the beginnings of our career, where she had a tiny, tiny restaurant on Queens Boulevard in Queens. And I was, and my sister, who just got married, so we can date it to that, moved into an apartment around the corner from her restaurant, and we frequented her restaurant. So I, as she says, I know her son, who's Joe Bastian, and she's pretty famous himself these days, that I know Joe since he was in a stroller behind the bar. Anyway, she wrote the foreword to this book. The other two books, one is written by a woman I know extremely well. I'm pretty sure she just passed away. Irena Chalmers. Irena, not Irina, but Irena Chalmers, is credited as being the publisher and author of more cookbooks than anybody ever. She did have her own little imprint. Now, you may in somewhere in the recesses of your house have some of Irena's cookbooks. They were she pioneered what we call the single subject cookbook. And she wrote over 100 of them. She did a lot of other things, and she, including writing this cookbook called The Confident Cook. Now, I never bought, I wasn't even aware of this, even though Irena was my friend. I wasn't even aware of this book until Cookster Picador brought it out in a new edition. And I'm impressed, Irena. This is, if you need a basic cookbook, you can't, I mean, a basic old-fashioned cookbook. Well, I should say a basic cookbook with classic recipes, French and international in general, and basic and American. You could do a lot worse than The Confident Cook by Irena Chalmers. Take a look. These books, by the way, are still available through Amazon, I noticed this morning, and they're under $10 each at this point. Or maybe the hardcover is $12 and the Kindle edition is cost nothing. So the third book, by the way, I did cook something from my own book in the course of looking for banana bread. I decided instead to make a sour cream coffee cake because I had a lot of sour cream to use up. And I had the chocolate chips. I had everything in the house. So I made it. And following my own instructions, this cake does not hold together well until it is at least 6 or 8 hours old. So it took everything for us to keep our hands off of it. For that, we actually left the house so that we wouldn't attack it. But I did try cutting it when it had just cooled down to room temperature, and sure enough, that was not the moment to slice it. And the next day, we did that night eat some, but the next day it was even better. So if you want to make the chocolate chip sour cream coffee cake, you might have a copy of Cooking in the Small Kitchen. Listen, follow my directions and don't eat the cake until the next day. Making it a very good cake, by the way, to bring somewhere. Anyway, the third book is called Indian Cookery. It's written by Samin Rushdie, who is the sister of Salman Rushdie, as who we all remember, the novelist who what do you call it when they want to kill you in the Muslim world? Fatma? Is that what it's called? Anyway,
so.
He had one on his head.
I think so.
Yes, Salman. So Salman is the person who wrote the new foreword to Samin Rushdie's Indian Cookery, as well he should. And he says in it, this is really the home cooking that I grew up with. And I know that Cookster, Picador, picked these books because we all have real serious home cooking in our books. And I immediately found, you know, I'm always looking to get a little Indian in my repertoire, a little Chinese in my repertoire. I now make Thai basil beef all the time. That's in my regular rotation. Anyway, this book had many recipes that I am going to attempt. And the only ingredient that I don't have in the house, interesting because I've been looking for it, is coriander seed. Now, there's ground coriander everywhere, no problem. But I wanted to get some whole coriander seed. I have no problem grinding my own spices, and I do think that these seeds are more fragrant and taste better when they're a little bit toasty. So I have to go to a special store to buy. I mean, obviously, I can buy cumin seed in Brooklyn. But I just haven't gone to the right store. So, but now, encouraged by Samin Rushdie, I'm going to actually keep some ground coriander seed in the cupboard here, in the spice cabinet, because she uses it a lot. And I can see I'm going to be making some of these recipes regularly. And now here's one that I'm going to do today, because I don't even need the coriander seed. But a lot of her dishes start out with caramelized onion, or really deep golden onion, chopped or even pureed onion, cooked in ghee or clarified butter. I happen to have a bottle of homemade ghee in the refrigerator, but nowadays I see you can actually buy ghee in the supermarket, at least in the markets I go to. They do have clarified butter, so there must be a lot of Indian cooks around. Anyway, this recipe she calls black pepper chicken. I don't attempt the... all the recipes are in, I guess it's Hindu, and but it could be Punjab, I don't know. One of the Indian languages, and English. In English, this is called black pepper chicken. And you basically cook your onion. You marinate, in her recipes, you are often marinating your chicken skinless but on the bone, in lemon juice, drying it, and then cooking it with the, in this case, you're cooking it with a lot of onion, a lot of sort of very, very finely chopped onion and clarified butter. And then once you've coated the chicken with all this, you add yogurt, simmer it in yogurt, and at the end you add a heaping teaspoon of cracked black peppercorns. And you let it cook a little longer. This is one of those simple recipes, like a lot of Italian food, it's more about technique than it is about ingredients. Well, it is about ingredients, of course. Anyway, I'm really into these cookbooks, and it's like visiting old friends. I mean, I don't know Samin Rushdie, but she talks to you like your Indian sister would. And interestingly, when these books first came out, 3.5 years ago, it was my nephew's 40th birthday. By the way, cooking in a small kitchen is dedicated to Brian because he and the book would do it at the same time. And he has many Indian friends, my nephew, and among the Indian friends were several wives from England, Indian girls from England. I think my nephew's friends import them from England. It was the most beautiful group of women I've seen in my house ever. And they were all, you know, in their 30s, at the height of their beauty. And I shouldn't say that. I know I have an 84-year-old friend, and we always say she's at the height of her beauty. Anyway, it was interesting. All these women who grew up in England knew about Samin Rushdie's book. And this was only published in 1988. All these young women were, you know, they were single digit, but they were around when apparently their Indian English mothers loved this book. So a lot, I mean, I think 1988, the Indian population of England itself, middle class Indian population, might not have been that great. I should do a little homework on this. But obviously, in 1988, this was a big deal to young Indian women who wanted to cook Indian, because it was all with English measurements in the Queen's English. Even the words, you know, color is color. And what's lovely about this book, besides there are so many doable recipes for somebody who doesn't do Indian. In fact, I just opened randomly to any page, and I immediately came to a recipe I unquestionably am going to make because it's lentils. And in my segueing into my new, more or less Mediterranean diet from not eating any carbohydrates, lentils are high on my list of big deal carbs, as are chickpeas. Anyway, reading all these old cookbooks, those are not the only three that I've been perusing, I realize how ingredients have changed. Now, my book was written 40 years ago, more than 40 years ago, and I call for cans of 7-ounce cans of tuna fish. I think tuna is now, is it down to 5 ounces? Or 5.5 ounces. So that's a significant difference, especially if a recipe calls for 2 cans of tuna and they were 7-ounce cans, and now it's going to be 10 ounces instead of 14 ounces. That's a difference. Chicken size. I've complained about this before on this very radio show. Chickens are hard to find under 3 pounds. Almost every chicken in these books, even in Samin Rushdie's book, which was written 10 years after mine, the chickens are 2.5 to 3 pounds. That's what a chicken, everyday young chicken used to be. Now I've been reading a lot about chicken lately because this is your subject, Marshall. Did you grow up on a chicken farm?
Yes, well, by the time I grew up, it was rapidly ending. But yes, I did grow up on a chicken farm, and the horrors still wake me up at night as a young kid.
Well, I must say that I toured the Delmarva Peninsula. I have to call them chicken factories, way, way back when Delmarva was really, and Purdue were really gearing up. And I was horrified back then. And then supposedly the whole industry changed. Free range, free roaming, cage free, all these terms are used. But I just read, it's no less horrifying now than it was then. And one of the horrifying aspects of turkey, of chicken production, is that chickens grow unnaturally fast. Apparently, they go from like chick to 4 pounds in weeks. So you can imagine those. I'm not sure I want to eat those chickens anymore. And there was a period, I got to say, just a few years ago, where I was totally off of chicken after doing other chicken research. But I am going to eat chicken, and I can find good chicken. And it's like when people tell me they're vegan because of the way the animals are treated, that's not a reason, because I know goats treated better than young people. So
you know, when I was growing up, my grandfather, Melvin Dennis, had a chicken farm. And he had 40 different pens that were, each chicken had a pen, okay, and a large pen, so they weren't cooped up or anything like that. That wasn't the horrible part. That was kind of the fun part. The horrible part was the processing of the chickens. I mean, as a young kid...
That's a natural thing. I didn't grow up on a farm, but I worked on a farm as a teenager, and we, you know, my farmer would trade... dairy products. He was a dairy farmer for chickens with the neighbor, and I saw him slaughter chickens. And I've gone to plants, kosher chicken plants, where I watch slaughter. But the slaughter part isn't bothering me. You got to slaughter them to eat them. But the horrifying part is how they're raised. I mean, the eggs are hatched in drawers, literally, and the chicks spend their first, I don't know how many hours, days, in a drawer. They're crowded into, well, I don't need to go into all that. I don't want to lose your appetite. I don't buy those chickens if I can help it. But the thing you have to understand with the new chickens is they're really, really tender. And if you go back to the old chickens, they're not going to be that. They're going to have flavor, but they're not going to be so tender. Another thing that has changed, besides the size of chickens, is the size of tomato cans. So this came up just the other day, before I even was spending my hours reading old cookbooks. There's a woman, she's not really a friend, I'm an acquaintance, but I'm a big admirer of hers. Her name is Erica Demaine, Erica, D-E-M-A-N-E. You'll find her online. She's on Facebook, and she's got a website. She calls herself an improvisational Southern Italian cook, and that's how I met her. When she wrote her first cookbook, she came on my radio program, and we talked. We bonded over Southern Italian. But unlike me, who is almost stupidly slavish to traditional recipes, Erica is an artist, and she can't draw within the lines. So she goes outside the lines. And I saw a recipe of hers. I don't know, maybe she mentioned it on Facebook, and I looked it up. And I made it, by the way, a sensational recipe, even though I made a few little changes. But it calls for, I don't want to lose my track here, it calls for a 35-ounce can of tomatoes. And I keep meaning to write to Erica and say, I think that you must have devised this recipe a long time ago, because there are no more 35-ounce cans of tomatoes. So I verified this with my friend Kathy Coluccio, who is one of the siblings who own and run Coluccio, my Italian market, and they're wholesalers. So and they import tomatoes in all different can sizes, but not 35-ounce. And Kathy said, no, we haven't done that in many years. I think if you find a 35-ounce can of tomatoes on a shelf, you can be almost certain that it's been sitting on that shelf for quite a long time. And the fact is, even canned tomatoes do not last forever. Look at the bottom of the can and see if you can figure out, because on the bottom of the can, there's always the date of canning. But it's sometimes in code that you can't really make out if you're just a normal person. Anyway, almost all tomatoes, canned tomatoes, certainly from Italy, are in 28-ounce cans. So that means I was short 7 ounces of tomato from her recipe from Erica's recipe, and I couldn't decide at first, should I just add more tomatoes to make up for the 7 ounces, or should I just leave it at my 28-ounce can of tomatoes? I left it at the normal 28-ounce can of tomatoes. And by the way, in this recipe, this was telltale. Erica also points out that if sometimes these tomatoes are very watery and you don't want to use all that liquid in your in this ragu that she's outlining. And I remember, if you look at my Naples at Table, at the time I wrote that in the mid-90s, canned tomatoes in the U.S., even the ones imported from Italy, came in tomato juice, not in tomato puree. So I very often tell you in that cookbook, Naples at Table, to drain the tomatoes. These days I would never drain a can of tomatoes. Not only that, but I rinse out the can with a little water to get every last drop of that tomato puree off the sides of the can. And I use a rubber spatula to clean it out. No. So, you know, things change. And I'm looking at books that were written even 20 years ago, and things have changed. And when you're looking at old cookbooks, they may be old friends, but... And also, I've changed my cooking. I make a lot of the things in cooking in a small kitchen. I still make a lot of those things, but I make them a little differently. Even a cake, for instance, I mix cakes a lot better than I used to. I'm very thorough about creaming butter and sugar, adding eggs one at a time, and beating them in thoroughly. And these are instructions that I didn't necessarily put into every baking recipe back in 1978, when I was a boy.
It's a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah. 78, well, I was 31. By me now, that's a boy.
A kid.
Well, anyway, I was always of this belief, and it includes me, that most guys don't really grow up until their late 20s.
I still haven't grown up.
Well, lucky you. Lucky you. Anyway, there was one of my old friend's cookbooks. I ran across this one, Susan Weiler. Susan Weiler was the food editor of Food and Wine magazine in the heyday of Food and Wine magazine. I don't even know if Food and Wine magazine publishes anymore. It used to be owned by American Express and a vehicle of American Express, so maybe it still does. Susan Weiler has a recipe. And Susan moved from Manhattan to I think it's Northwest Pennsylvania, and bought this country house and started cooking like a country woman, even though she was a hugely sophisticated, cosmopolitan New York City editor. And one of the recipes in this homey book from her country house is a recipe that Joan Hamburg, my former radio wife, you know, Joan and I broadcast together for 20 years, so I always call her my radio wife. Joan Hamburg still talks about and still makes, I think. And I have to just say, it's a nothing recipe, but again, a nothing recipe. It's to make a hash, you saute onions, you saute some parboiled potatoes, everything cut into small pieces. And then at the last minute, you throw in some shredded up leftover chicken or turkey, toss that around, heat it through, and then pour barbecue sauce over the whole thing. That's it. Now, you could make your own barbecue sauce and make more out of this than necessary, but I guarantee you, Joan Hamburg, who roasts a turkey almost every week and uses this recipe a lot for the leftovers, is not baking her own barbecue sauce. But, you know, there's an unbelievable number of barbecue sauces on the market these days, and I'm supposing some of them are good. It's not something I buy. The last time I bought some was only a few months ago. I bought a sugar-free barbecue sauce, and it was so gross I poured it down the drain. So, that's it.
All right.
All right. Now, Erica Demain, I should probably give the recipe for this, but next week, if you don't find it online, I made a big batch of this ragu, which is loaded with vegetables. I like that part. And I froze half of it. So next week, it'll be like new. I'll give the recipe. You can look online. It's Erica Demain Ragu, and it's got, I don't even know, it's more than, she's got more than one ragu.
All right.
All right. Anyway, Erica Demain, she's got great recipes.
All right. Have a good week, Arthur.
You too.
All right.
Everybody take care.
Take care.
Stay safe.
All right.
And calm. And calm.
Yes, please. Calm. Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, here on Robin Hood Radio. You can find him also at robinhoodradio.com. Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.